Good morning. It's 7:02 a.m. on January 5th, 2013. That's Pacific Coast time, northwest of the American continent. We had a fairly large earthquake last night, which woke me up. It was, I don't know, about 2 o'clock, I guess. Something like that. I'm unsure of the time, but it was I was sound asleep when there was a light rumble that went through, but it was the sharp kind. So it must have been extremely shallow, traveling very high speed through the glacial fill that we've got out here in the northwest. A lot of the northwest area is covered with a combination of this clay, various different colors, and really cool, but various kinds of clay that are intermingled with vast areas of gravel and debris. As the glaciers retreat, they leave all this crud on the surface of the land, and they also grind up a bunch of the stuff underneath them as they move about. So it you get this weird mixture around here. With on our particular piece of property 26 years ago when we moved in, the ground was so dense with the clay it was impossible to dig a garden in, and we had to build a garden up. It was just not feasible to grow in that ground. And the trees love it. I mean, the old growth firs and cedars, they've got something really good to grip on for them. It's like cement, concrete. Anyway, so a very large earthquake last night. No tsunami, at least none that's hit us. It was shallow, but I don't think it was a what's known as a shift or a rift kind, where there's a sledge effect that shifts water. Those are actually much more rare than the other kind of earthquakes we get around here, which are these sharp rumbles like that. Anyway, some things to talk about today. Won't take up too much of your time. But a really interesting development. It's taken me a couple of days to get through all of it and then to do some research on the background to see how valid it was. But it's about this, the Iradia couple, the radiation couple out of Russia. There's an interview available on YouTube, and you can also find it on, probably Carrie Cassidy's site. She's probably got a copy of it there. And it's, which is Project Camelot. And it's an interesting video. They are using a lot of the same language that we'd had forecast for the couple out of what we'd pegged as Siberia, would be associated with Siberia, as a precursor to the blooming and burgeoning of the new electrics. So let's examine for a second if this couple, which at this point there's about 38% of the language, that's very high. We usually cap it at about 52%, somewhere between there and 58%. I just stopped tracking because it's fulfilled in my mind. Occasionally it'll change, but it's only been twice that it's been of any interest that in that sense. And the last time was the Israeli mistake when it morphed. In any event, though, so here's this Iradia couple, a young man and a woman that meet the descriptions that we had had for this couple that we had described as coming out of Siberia or being associated with Siberia as a direct precursor to this blooming of the new electrics period. Now, this will be very interesting to a number of individuals because our forecast for the new electrics and for the radiation couple, we didn't call them that, bear in mind. That's how they are referred to in this video, is the couple Iradia. All about ionizing radiation. Now, our descriptions had it actually reversed. We had her as being the blonde and him as having the shaved head. That was a little odd that we'd gotten that component of it, but it had it reversed. Nonetheless, though, they are in, that getting it reversed is very easy because our data doesn't really bring in appropriate things like pronouns or senses of possession or ownership. We have to make some assumptions at that point, and of course, in our assumption, you know, the women have the longer hair. So it's just easily described that way. In any event, though, so our data has this young couple appearing in Russia about this time, and our data forecast this a number of years back. I think we had the first occurrences maybe as early as 2004 when it was somewhat indistinct, and we really weren't really keyed into the whole new electrics concept as the larger meme that was being represented among many things, the appearance of this particular couple. our data showed a couple coming out of Siberia, they'd have a connection to Siberia. Well, there may indeed be a connection to Siberia, even though this couple is in far western Russia, Moscow. There's the association now with the impact meteorite, impact of the meteor that created that huge store of diamonds that have this interesting number of interesting dielectric properties that are not seen in other diamonds. And so the Russian energy industry over there and their scientists are having a good time with this new form of a crystalline structure of carbon and what it can provide. Apparently it has some very interesting surface characteristics. And so, but I won't go into any more details on that. Nonetheless, though, so now we have a rising from Siberia. We have this connection to crystalline structure that will probably end up being involved in the new electrics, which is to say the impact diamonds. And we also now have the irradiation couple coming out of Russia, who so far, as I say, the data and the language being used by them fulfills about 38% of what we'd forecast for that couple. So if this is the case, if this is indeed the couple that is the precursor to the new electrics, then as part of that set, the continuing evolution of this meme will have some form of the new electrics subset arising out of South Africa. And that South Africa connection will be followed very, very, very closely and temporally, like maybe the same day, maybe the same week, by information coming out of, let's just say, Midwestern Canada, not coastal Canada and not middle Canada, but in that huge mountainous region in between. Excuse me. And so, this is part of this trend. We also have associations that, so now we can expect, with this from that data set, because of the associations to other data sets within the new electrics, a combination of other memes that will arise, and they're associated with the new electrics. They may take all of 2013 to occur. I just don't know. But because we don't have the, within the longer-term data from which this was taken, we don't have any way of really assigning a time value. But now that the temporal markers are falling, we know that the next ones up will be this connection to South Africa and then rapidly Canada. This is relative to minerals, process, technology, that sort of thing. Then there's going to be an association between involving an Italian and an Indian, a Hindu scientist. Now, these two guys or women, gender is indeterminate, are going to then be connected with an American and a Chinese. And the four of those people, as well as these three connections relative to Siberia, South Africa, and Canada, are going to form this, let's just say, Magnificent Seven that will bring us over the new electrics hurdle insofar as the general population is concerned. Now, our data never said that any of this, that we were ever going to get new electrics gadgets rolling out the door and flooding the planet this year or anything. But this trail that we're on now is basically a recapture, insofar as our data is concerned, of the trail that we should have gone down with Tesla et al. And we were diverted by some other intelligence, let's just put it that way, and went into an area we should not have. Universe has decided that that's got to be corrected. And so it's providing that correction now in the form of this juxtaposition of circumstances and personalities and motivations. And it's kind of strange to sit here and watch it come to fruition. We get some of the things wrong. Like I say, we figured the woman, mainly I did, monkey mind kind of stuff, figured the woman would have the blonde hair and that the male would have the shorn head. But we knew that they would be associated in depth with radiation and new forms of radiation, new understanding of radiation, and new electrics, the generation of new energy from that. So now we're back onto this other trail, apparently, that universe is shifting us to understand things in a different way and produce an entirely different base technology from which other things can grow. So in a sense, this is a huge turning of the planet, because we are seeing the development of a technology, like I say, it's my personal opinion, that we should have grown from Tesla. There should have been a contemporary with Tesla that would have led us through Fuller and to something else, a different kind of a future. And that contemporary was missing, or there was some jiggery-pokery by some kind of intelligence to get us onto the digital path. But in essence, we're now apparently retracing and going to go up this other area. This new electrics thing is really cool because it's a basically for us, for this particular generation, we can think of this as a savior science, in that this is the promised science, this is the promised land, we'll produce milk and honey, you know, ultimate, what is that, not devaluation, a deflation in the sense, not in the economic sense, but in the human sense, where every day you can put in less energy to get more goods, that kind of sense. And then that allows your mind to be truly free, and you can come up with some really interesting things, you know, like warp drives and so on. In any event, though, so the appearance of the Iradia couple and the fact that they are at this level of language. Now, I can't validate that what they say is factual, but I don't see, if I were playing poker against them, I would have to say that, you know, they're holding a good hand. They're not betraying anything. They're within the use of the Cyrillic language. Their intonation and inflection and everything is very good. It's not like watching Dan Burish, for instance, who is, you know, a master of tells. I'd love to play poker against that guy because he's constantly telling you exactly when he's lying and how all this is going down. If you will look at both of these individuals in the Iradia couple video, you'll see the lack of usual tells for deception. In fact, reinforcing their words are normalized, expected facial and emotional responses. So there is no disconnect here. There is not a cognitive dissonance. There doesn't appear to be a situation of these people being under mind control. Neither one of them have the weird eyes that you get when, you know, there's a cognitive dissonance going on. So they are, in my mind, at least so far, worth pursuing as a potential for this particular couple that we'd seen as this with the association to Siberia. We got that wrong, I think, but they may have an association with Siberia that is unknown to me at this stage. I haven't done much research about them as individuals, just about the story in general. And it all tracks. I mean, there's, you know, they are indeed running into problems with the local Russian authorities, and the Russian authorities are gradually coming to some understanding that what they have here is not what they originally thought. And there is some verbiage to support the view of the Iradia couple that they're being persecuted basically because of their life form, if you will. So under those circumstances, we've met a number of the forecast criteria for the couple out of Siberia. So now I await the connection to South Africa and Canada. This will be very exciting. For those of you guys that are in the money business, it would be extremely risky to make any kind of a bet or a wager or a, quote, investment or a speculation on what I'm telling you now, because this is the most spurious and tenuous and ethereal of information to go on, and doesn't inform us in terms of intelligence, and it may inform us a little bit in terms of potential consciousness of what's going to occur in the next few days, but there's no solidity here at all. Even in a world in which there is no solidity, this is pretty ephemeral. So you take my point. If you do anything relative to this, expect to lose your money. However, this is what we know relative to the connections, and so I would look for something to arise out of South Africa. Bear in mind that what we forecast is the language that will arise to the point where it hits the mainstream media in some form. So it's not like you've got to go to South Africa and root around and look for some weird scientist digging, you know, strange dirt out of the ground or anything like that, nor in Canada. Whatever it is will in some way hit the mainstream media. I suspect that, of course, in the initial way of things, that the other components that will arise for this basic core, the Magnificent Seven and the New Electrics, will probably be found in the more specialized journals. So if I were actually in the investment world, I might spend a few weeks reading, in a general sense, all of the new science kind of information online, coming out of those sorts of peer-reviewed, or not even peer-reviewed, but conferences and, you know, abstracts, that kind of deal, because that's where you're going to get the bleeding edge of what's going on in science, is where these guys are able to discuss it among themselves and throw it out just to see how many grins and chuckles they're going to get over some of these ideas. And from there on, you might be able to track somebody that over time might be able to give you some return on an investment. But we're talking, you know, 20 years, and money may not mean anything like what it does now. In fact, it shouldn't. So the new electrics and all of this continues in spite of the fact that we're going to get this global coastal event, because the global coastal event and its impact on the rest of the planet, that is to say the non-coastal component of the continents, is not a civilization killer. It sets us back and it causes us a whole ton of trouble. But in a sense, it's like World War II hitting Japan and Germany. It was not a good thing for them. It was not a good thing for anybody. But their societies were totally wiped out. The only component to that that was a grace was that things were so destroyed that when they rebuilt, they were the leading edge. And for years, industrially, Japan and Germany have led the planet because they were so destroyed in World War II. There's going to be some component of that occurring now as the global coastal event takes out some of the more industrialized areas in the Northern Hemisphere. And when we rebuild, we will be rebuilding in a cutting-edge fashion. And, of course, it, just like in Germany and Japan, and I lived through the rebuilding in Germany. I was in there during that period of time. You're talking a probably 12 years, 12 to 14 years before there will be a visible sign of progress, and the local populace after this would be able to give a little bit of sigh of relief. Also now, our global coastal event forecast, as well as the farsight.org stuff, is not the end. We're showing a nasty occurrence that will bifurcate this year before June 1, and beyond that, we can't really forecast. There's going to be other events. Our original long-term data set from 2003 that was so prescient didn't really show us coming out of the bumpy ride, so to speak, until between 2018 and 2020. And so our big sigh in terms of the relief beginning from the rebuilding will be about 12 years beyond that period. So that would make it into the 2030s, something in there. And that's because we're going to be very much like the situation that happened in the Harappan Valley in the last cycle. I was privileged to be able to read some thieved material in Germany that had been taken from an area in the northwest part of India. Currently, that's the northwest part of India. In this particular civilization that had existed there, this material had been stolen by the Nazis and for whatever purpose, and I just happened to come across it decades later and read some of the annotations about it. And then one of the books was from this headmaster of this village, and it was basically his log, his accounting of who owed who what amount of labor. That's how they dealt with things. They didn't deal with things in a currency fashion, but within time. And how many people had to contribute to the common good and that kind of thing, as well as the recording of events. So it was kind of as like his ship's log for their little village. And in his log, they got to the point in their village where the village was destroyed by a large earthquake after a number of years of smaller earthquakes ramping up. And they rebuilt the village, and then it was destroyed again in a relatively short order, like less than a year after they'd rebuilt. And so they rebuilt for the third time, and then it was just totally pulverized. And then the earthquakes just kept going and going and going. And eventually, they resorted to living in temporary housing for a while. And by a while, I get the impression there was about 18 months or more before they finally made the decision to leave the area, because the earthquakes kept going, were an ongoing problem, and they were just not able to progress in their society. And their society had they weren't in a timbered area. They had some brush and this kind of stuff based on the kind of brick and so forth they were making, but basically they were a clay brick society trying to exist in a world of very large earthquakes happening fairly frequently. And the two just didn't continue to work very well. Plus, there were issues with the aquifers being disturbed by the earthquakes, and so they ran out of water. And so they decided to relocate. Now, so their introduction to the cycle thousands of years ago, spanned about a decade before they finally made that decision to take a hike to the east. To the west, excuse me. They went west. In any event, though, so we may be looking at that same thing. So it may be that from basically 2012 through 2022 or some larger chunk of that span is spent in this process of disruption. And under these circumstances, it may be wise to get a jump on the Harappans and say, well, you know, we just went through this big-ass earthquake and most of our city fell down. Let's not rebuild it right away. Let's give it a couple of weeks and, you know, everybody chill for a while, sort things out, collect our various piles of rubble and see what's going to happen. Because if there's another big earthquake, we don't want to be in the middle of rebuilding when it hits us. As I suspect that may be the case. We should also have indicators from the sun about this because of the plasma events. And then we have all of those really large comets and other things hitting us, or not hitting us, but coming through the area in 2013. So, anyway, the Aradia couple I think is pretty cool. This will be really good in the end. Next stage for this, I think that will be visible, will be discovery of or connection to South Africa, and then in short order Canada, and at the same time probably appearing in their other journals, should be the individuals cited as part of the process here. I need to get moving on. I don't want to take up all your time on this Wujo. Just wanted to report that. I also needed to give you some interesting bits of information here, and a sort of a pet peeve. A friend of mine had me watch some videos from this guy by the name of David Wolf, who's over doing videos on Gaiam TV. A buddy of mine, Jerry, has an interest in David, has been following him for a number of years, and said, hey, you know, what do you know about the guy, and is this information accurate? And I, to be honest, had never ever looked at it, didn't know about the fellow, really. I mean, I was vaguely aware there was a guy by the name of David Wolf, and just had no real interest in any of the subject because he's in a nutritional kind of a thing in a world that I, in this new age kind of a deal, that I just don't frequent. So I was unaware of it. But my friend Jerry had some serious health concerns, and occasionally people will contact me like that. I don't know why. Universe has them do it, and occasionally I can figure out something about what's going on. And poor old Jerry here, his issue related entirely to following, in my opinion, because it's now corrected, the use recommended by David Wolf, apparently, of a, quote, superfood called spirulina. And here's the deal. That and all the blue-green algaes, all the algae foods are algae is an interesting subject in and of itself. Apparently these people, the nutrition guys, the Nutri guys, are citing some archaeological evidence that Mesoamericans and Polynesians grew algae in giant ponds as a reference for saying that algae is a superfood. Now, algae meets some criteria of that in the sense that it has some of the chlorophyll components and this kind of a thing, and they're quite correct about what algae contains, but algae is also very interesting because it's basically what we can think of as like a hard shell plant precursor. And there is no evidence, by the way. Yeah, they found the ponds, and these people used to grow vast quantities of algae in these nice arrangements all over the Pacific and the Gulf sides of Mesoamerica, as well as throughout Polynesia in some areas. And so we know they grow it, but there's no evidence that they eat it. There's never been any study I've ever seen in of any of the material, including coprolites, including, you know, fossilized human shit, that says that humans ever ate that stuff. We know from some literature that the Mesoamericans grew it as a fertilizer, as a basis for a complex part of their agriculture. And there's never any indication that they did eat it. Plus, bear in mind, the only way that we can eat it in a modern fashion is if you have the cells of the algae broken open for you by high-impact machines. Because you're not able to crunch it, your digestion can't break it open in a sufficient fashion to make it meaningful to you. And that was what was the issue with my poor friend Jerry. Even though the material was this blasted open cell structure stuff, it still was so horrid on his digestion, and he was unaware that it was that component that was causing it. And he kept reducing everything basically but this from his diet, and got himself into a nasty spiral that led him to go to physicians, and they sort of couldn't figure it out either, because he wasn't really, you know how the physicians are, they never have the time to talk to anybody about what's going on, and so they didn't really understand what was going on, that it was an issue in diet for him. And once he stopped the spirulina, within 2 days he was just fine. It's a harsh component, a harsh thing for your body to try and absorb. And think of this as well. The plants that we consume now, 98% of them or something outrageous like that, are all genetically related to asters, and most of the phytotaxonomies are entirely wrong, anything devised pre-DNA studies, and that the aster family, we know for a fact, is basically the collision of an algae and a fungus. You had this fungus creeping along on the shore, and you had an algae that got washed up and was immobile and smacked into the mycelium of the fungus, and it was able to stand up and basically have a new look at the world, and that's how plants came into existence. And so algae, in that sense, is a plant precursor. If you want to go for a superfood, I'd look for wheatgrass, because wheatgrass is simply one molecule away from having hemoglobin in it. And so the chlorophyll molecule, the way that it's structured in wheatgrass, you can even just chew grass and get benefit from the chlorophyll molecule, and your body will do the substitution of the magnesium for the iron, and or the iron for the magnesium, and you end up with hemoglobin. So it's good stuff for you if you want to go that route for superfood, or if you want to go for eating for micronutrients, that makes a lot of sense. But in my mind, there's not a whole lot to suggest that algae should be consumed by humans. If you want to use it for fertilizer, it's great stuff. You can also make oil out of it. And there's a whole lot of uses to it, because it grows fast and you don't have to do a lot of stuff just to make it. So it's, it's good stuff in that way, but I wouldn't eat it. Now, two last things here, and I'll get off. We'll keep it to about a half an hour. I've noticed something on my rocket mass heater that was a very interesting effect, and I'm going to pursue. And that is that I'm on the third rebuild. It's solid now. I understand what's going on in terms of the mechanics of the laminar flow and how the fire works and the whole deal. But in model number 2, because of a shortening of the constant cross-section, ever so slightly, and a lengthening of the fire tube, I got this weird pulsing that was basically uncontrollable once it started. And it was sort of like a dieseling effect that you might get when an older diesel engine is starting to feed off of its own lubricating fluids due to a separation in a gasket somewhere. And so you can't get the thing to stop. I've actually had an old diesel that did that, and you'd have to run around and shove a rag in the air intake in order to shut your truck off. The fun days. Anyway, so I get this pulsing in the rocket mass stove, and now I know what caused it, because I was able to get over it and make it very much more efficient and straightforward in doing the third rebuild. And in doing so, I've now gotten to the point where the flames are basically horizontal after that first match. And the flame can get up about 3 to 4 inches high and be a horizontal band on either side of the firebox, and it goes back about 6 to 8 inches, so it'd be very good for, and it's all pure yellow light, so it'd be very good for some thermoelectric kind of stuff using photovoltaics through some kind of mica or something off to the side. But what's really intriguing to me is this pulsing effect, because once the fuel was put in there and a certain heat level was reached, as it didn't do any damage other than it shook the once I let it go, usually the first time I did it, I thought, oh, things going to blow up basically and disintegrate, because it wasn't really all that crafted at that point. I was doing an experiment. And so I just sort of had tied a few things together with wire on the inside of the combustion chamber, and I kind of knew it was a little loose and was intending to rebuild it in any event. But I get the pulsing effect there, and it's this throbbing. It's a whoosh, 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 actual boluses of air being sucked into the fuel intake area such that it would rattle the wood each time. And that may have even participated in the continuing effect of the of this pulsing. But the pulsing itself I found to be very intriguing, because as long as you had fuel in there, and actually up to a certain point, as long as it was that hot, so even with a big coal base it continued, even with no active logs in the fuel feeding chamber, and you'd get a pulsing that was noticeable. So there's an effect going on there relative to the laminar flow in which a bolus of some size is passing through the system as a whole with no real damage to the system, other than I say my loose bricks were rattled in the firebox from this. And I think that that pulsing effect represents a chance to get something basically a minor over-unity effect out of it. Because here we are burning the wood, and it's heating, and we're getting all of the flames off of it, and getting all of the heat out of it. And in addition to that, for some reason, the laminar flow process is inducing this reverse cough, if you will, through the system. And it is actually expelling the gases the same way, except for a minor throbbing I could see in the smoke. There was no real bolus that was coming out of the system as a whole. And that was my real problem, was that it was a lot of the energy was being used up in the loose fire bricks that I'd stacked up to make my combustion chamber. So, under the circumstances, it's likely possible, I think. I'm noodling all different kinds of ways of getting energy out of that pulsing effect and just using it as part of the system, not to consume the wood any faster, which it does. There was no question about that. Every time there was a bolus moving through the stove, you could actually stand above and watch as the wood shook all the ash off and flame flared up with a new bolus of air coming through, and the whole system went through this little tremor. So I don't know if I'll end up using, you know, paddle wheels inside my ducting or what, but it still isn't a very intriguing effect to get an extra burst of energy out of there. So I'm going to look at that. And then one other thing is that there's been some friends of mine were telling me about this. They ran across this up in local hills here, about 4,000 to 5,000 feet high, where people have been doing some geocaching of tools and other things that will be useful after a global coastal event, including tents and camping gear and all of that. Now, these friends of mine, who are also into geocaching, which is a sort of a weird game, as I understand it, where you go and hunt up stuff that other people have dug in the ground, sort of like treasure hunting. And you're hunting for sparklies, and you don't take anything. You just want to say, aha, I found it. And so usually you add stuff to it. In any event, though, they have found that people have been doing some fairly large caching and are apparently taking these things relatively seriously. So that's a good sign that there are people are out there with enough wherewithal in terms of goods and money to begin thinking about this and have made for themselves some areas that will at least be able to allow them a modicum of breathing space as we get into the recovery mode here, or actually the endurance mode prior to the recovery mode. Bearing in mind, I don't think recovery really starts until probably about 2022 or something like that. And then we'll go on from there with some seriousness, because we'll have the new electrics behind it and a whole lot of work to do. And people will have been basically cabin fever housebound for too long. So the caching, I'm understanding it is like the winter huts we used to have in Bavaria and Switzerland, where if you got off the track or whatever in the middle of winter, there were these huts and these little lines on the non-weather side ridge line of the hills, and anybody could go in there and stay, and it'd keep you alive and you could survive. Because the winter was, you know, unpredictable. We didn't have weather satellites and this kind of thing, so you could get trapped a lot easier than you can today. Although, you know, we still, as an aside, still managed to have a bunch of doofuses go up hiking in our area in the winter. And, you know, even if you know what you're doing, look at how many people die doing this. Look how many idiots get up there and freeze to death. If Yeah, it's nice to hike in the snow, but make sure you're on the other side of one of the weather systems. Anyway, so that's kind of my rant for the day. I'm just very interested about the Iradia couple, and I'll be following that up until we get to 52% or bomb out on the language, and I'll let you know how it goes. But if indeed this couple is part of the New Electric's precursor, then we should, over the next few weeks, I think, see something relatively interesting emerge out of South Africa, followed shortly thereafter by Canada. And it'll be really cool for all of us. Thanks much for listening. Next talk is going to be Thursday. We were running the data this morning, and it looks like we'll be able to do a little bit better job, simply because there's a little bit of our processing that we're getting ahead of now, so we've got a base for it. Thanks much.